The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
It settles in your soul. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa with Jefferson State of Mind. I am broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading at 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, your talk radio. And we are streaming live on KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com, and you can always go to our archives and listen to this program anytime you want. And we are getting some adjustments here with lighting and all kinds of good stuff, as our producer is doing what she always does, and that's taking care of all of us. And that's what she's doing right now. Anyway, I'm here this morning with Wynn Carpenter.
Good morning.
Who is running for District 3 Supervisor, and Corky Harmon.
Good morning.
Who's running for District 3 Supervisor. And I'm also here with my wonderful, talented, efficient producer.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, as always. How are you?
Did we plan that perfect, huh? Well, you were running out of here and into there. We planned that perfect, didn't we, Christina?
Of course. Time management, first of all.
Anyway, we're here. We need to, you know, we really need to be looking at some things this week that happened, and I want to talk about a friend of mine who passed away. His name is Pete Peters. And Pete was quite a guy. He served in the Air Force. He was a talk show host on a program called Freedom in Action. And he was a marvelous host, marvelous man. He and I go back to 2009. We actually were two of the original members of the Tea Party here. And we were served on a board together. And Pete's always been the kind of guy that looked out for people. He was very genuine. I think the thing that I'll miss most about Pete is just what a pleasant guy he was. What a breath of sunshine. Maybe that's a vision of sunshine, but a breath of fresh air the man was. Pete was exemplary as a host. I think that when he did his program, he was very good. He was extremely good with callers. Just really was very fair with everybody. And I can remember after the meetings we would have there at the Holiday Inn in the early days of the Tea Party, Pete would come up there and we'd talk and he'd go, "Hey, Raposa, let's go have a brewski." And so we'd go ahead and we'd sit down and we'd have a beer, and he said, "You know what we need to do is give these people some red meat." So from that day on, I named him Red Meat Pete. And, but just what a wonderful man. He'll be sorely missed. A patriot, a leader. We love you, brother, and you're in a better place now, and I believe that heaven has even improved with Pete's presence. So with that, I'd like to let people know that there will be a funeral for him. It'll be on May the 31st. That's May the 31st, starting at 9:30. That'll be at the Allen and Dahl Funeral Home in Palo Cedro. Then there'll be a procession from there to the Veterans Cemetery, and the services will start at 11 a.m. So that's May 31st. There'll be more on that when it gets closer. But anyway, to Patty and Pete's sisters, God bless you all, and we'll all miss them. Okay, so we're here with Corky Harmon and Wynn Carpenter, both running for District 3. So, gentlemen. Oh, by the way, this is a call-in show. I know that both these guys were on and they were recorded. That's why I kind of wanted to have them on this morning. And this is a call-in show. If you have a question for either Corky or Wynn, 605-4567, area code 530-605-4567. Well, gentlemen, I'm gonna just throw the same question out to both of you at first. You know, we've heard a lot of things that things need to be done in the county, and we need a forensic audit. You both agree on that. You both agree on the Second Amendment. You both agree on term limits. What changes do you think that Corky, you could make in District 3 that need to be changed in that district specifically? What would be one of the changes you'd make for your constituents in that district?
Well, we just talked about it in the last program, but the opposition to the windmill project is a big deal.
Sure.
And I think we all agree that we don't want the state pushing back, and the county's already decided. Everybody's decided. It was 5-0, 5-0, and the community's all against it, and it's kind of a no-brainer for me. I don't even think it should be a topic for the campaign.
Yeah, how can the state just take our rights away? It's amazing to see that state overreach. So, Wynn, what would be your main topic that you see in District 3, the main thing that really needs to be fixed, or the thing you have to address first in your own district?
Well, in District 3, since I worked in District 3 for a number of years, got the experience of having guns pointed at me when I stumbled across marijuana grows.
Yeah.
So I understand that firsthand. Believe me, I do. And when you're not allowed to carry, and even though I was a concealed carry permit holder, at that time I was not allowed to when I worked there. And until recently, it just sounds like that the board did the right thing. So now the citizens are able to do that, and the staff as well. Marijuana grows would be one of the first things. And if anybody wants help with that, I can certainly help them find those locations, because those are things that I had to deal with on a regular basis, going out and doing appraisals on the rural county properties. And some of them are very rural. And so those are things that need to be addressed. And I know that one of the supervisors flew over that not too long ago and shared that information with locations and even photographs with the sheriff. And
wow,
Nothing's been moving off the
really?
Dime yet. So
has that been brought to his attention?
It has. So that's one of the frustrating things, is then if we're going to have somebody who is supposed to be our legal, top legal officer for the
wow.
county, and they're not doing that, the board needs to have a sit-down with them, or publicly sit down with them at a board meeting, and needs to answer why they wouldn't be moving off the dime to get that taken care of. Absolutely, it has to be done. No two ways about it. We are part of the green belt, if you will, you know, Humboldt, Trinity, Shasta. And when I was working at the county, Shasta was getting to the point where they were going to surpass Trinity and Humboldt.
Wow.
So, and that was well known in the office. So, because we talked to other counties at times, different appraisers at different counties, and I actually have a family member who is an appraiser in another county, and they were saying exactly that their thought was that Shasta was going to surpass their county as well. And I'm sure by now it has. So that's something that I would really want to work on if we can get that moving as quickly as possible.
We'll come back to that, because I've got a couple of questions for both of you on that subject. But we have someone on the line. Caller, state your name and...
Oh, is that me, Terry?
It is.
So. Hey, this is Kelly Frost.
Oh, Kelly! Kelly,
yeah.
Okay, because I was trying... Anyway, it's... Okay, your name was spelled differently, buddy, on the board
okay.
here. How are you, my good friend? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I wanted to thank you for the nice tribute to Pete, you know, even though he's on a different station and all that. But, yeah, he's just really going to be missed. He was a great guy. And, I mean, you already said everything you need to say about him, and you announced the ceremony that's going to be on May 31st. So, but I just wanted to thank you for the tribute.
Well, Kelly, you know, I want to thank you for you've been, Kelly Frost has been at this for a long time, and I always call him the GOAT of producers, because Kelly, I've never seen, I did a couple of programs with Kelly years ago, but this man really knows how to chew gum and walk at the same time. I mean, he can get on there and answer the phones and do everything, be a great host and almost gracious. So, Kelly, we love you, brother, and yeah, hey, looking forward to seeing what you guys do in the upcoming year.
Yeah, Bill and I are gonna rotate weeks, so we'll, I, I don't know if we could ever do the research and the amount of stuff that Pete did, especially and even with his decorum that he had.
Sure.
But we're going to try.
I think you'll be fine, and I'll be happy. I'll give you a few calls when you're on there.
That'd be fine.
All right, my good friend. Bless you and bless your wife, and have a great day.
You too.
All right. We have Patrick Jones on the line. Patrick, how are you, sir?
Hey, very good. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. No one's hurt me yet, so I'm okay.
Outstanding. Hey, I just wanted to call in a little bit. This is Patrick Jones, Supervisor District 4. And the Fountain Wind Project, as you know, is a big deal, obviously, for, you know, state overreach. And it passed 4-1 at the Planning Commission meeting. Supervisor Modi supported that. And then the board unanimously turned it down. The day that it came to the Board of Supervisors, I met Corky out in the lobby, and because I saw him there as we took a break, and he said he supported the Fountain Wind project at that time. And then now I hear, just I heard that he does not support it. So I just wanted to have him explain how he did support it, and now he's not.
So
I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
You bet.
So Patrick called me about this, and he knows that I don't support it. And I told him, if you tell anybody I do support it, you're not telling the truth. So he's just flat out not telling the truth right now. I got in front of the board a couple years ago when that thing first came out, and I spoke about the how a quarry operates and how we have to do reclamation plans and bond it. That was all I spoke about.
Yeah, you know, I think that, the position now of what people hold probably is the most important. I do want to get back to the sheriff, and you know, I know that people want to support our sheriff, we want to back our sheriff, but there's been many, many things that have happened to where it's kind of it's tough. And I know that I've had an hour long talk with him before. And been in his office. And Corky, you had mentioned something about, I heard you mention something about immigration or something that the sheriff was going to be able to stand between us and what's going on with immigration. You had mentioned it on a show prior, and I just wanted you to kind of clarify that for me.
No, what I mentioned was that I'd had a conversation with Mike Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
About his border visit.
Gotcha.
I think it was 28 elected sheriffs, 28 different counties that did a field trip tour down there. I think it was 3 days.
Okay.
And it was very revealing, and I was able to have that conversation with him personally that described that. And it was brutal, you know. If I recall, so there's two main entry points on just the California border, and there's one processing center, and they were processing 1,000 people a day. And the most alarming to me pieces of information came out of that was there was, and I think, I want to be careful here, but I think it was like 2%, 1 point something, or maybe 3% that were Latino. The rest were
other
countries.
Other nationalities. I must have misunderstood what you said, because I'm trying to figure out where that jurisdiction comes in. See, I think the important thing as we run, and Wynn, I want to get back to you about what you said about the marijuana grows here, which is really something the sheriff should be addressing, I believe. I mean, he's addressing them, but is he addressing them? And I know there's been some grows on certain areas. I heard there's some grows out on the property Anselmo used to own, and there hasn't been any action out there, even though there's been action requested. You know, another thing I think that's really been, eye-opening again is the fact that, there doesn't seem to be any kind of, you never see much prosecution going on. So what's really happening? Do we just go and destroy them and then the guys run off and then they go plant it somewhere else? What's really going on in our county, guys, when it comes to these marijuana grows, which is just, it's going to lead to a lot more things.
Well, it's not just the marijuana plants themselves. It's all the aftermath when they put a fertilizer and all the other stuff that goes in there. And then the wrappers and the packaging of all that stuff gets left on the ground. It blows around, especially up in the rural part of the county. There's a lot of valleys and whatever you want to call them out there, but there's waterways that there are waterways out there, and they get caught up in the waterways. I've seen it over and over again. One little bridge, just like a couple culverts. It's not even a bridge; it's two culverts side by side for the water to pass under as you go over this dirt road. The water was running over the top of the culverts.
Wow.
Because it was backed up so much with all this debris.
Oh my gosh.
And so when you see that as you're bouncing around out there looking at the properties and stuff, it made me sick. It's like, and my first knee-jerk reaction was to get out there and pull that stuff out, but I didn't know what it was. I mean, you could see fertilizer packaging, you see other stuff. I was like, I'm not going to get in that because you don't know what you're going to get burned by. You don't know what else is in there. So I didn't, but what do you do? You know, and there were people that were living out there in those areas, and they live off the grid for reasons. They do not want to be bothered, what have you. And they're fine. They're legitimate doing that. But then down the street or down the road from them is where these grows are occurring, or right beside them is where these grows are occurring. And they just have to deal with that being in their neighborhood, which Wow. isn't fair to them. They're the taxpayers. They're living out there off the grid because they don't want to be on the grid. They want privacy. They don't want to have to worry about anybody coming in their neighborhood. Yet again, they have these marijuana grows that are perched right next door to them, and you can tell a marijuana grow, believe me, with all the visqueen going up on 7 to 10 foot tall fences all the way around the perimeter, and they might have a gap from the ground up maybe a foot so they can see feet walking around their property, and then they can send their dogs out after them, or they can just shoot them right out from under them, and I've heard of stories of that as well. So there's a lot of negativity to have that stuff out there, and it's not that it's not on the radar, and it's not that you can't see it from the air. You can. You certainly can. And they're trackable. You just need to go out there and do it. And I know from one experience when I was working out there, I was bouncing around out in the eastern part of the county and doing my job and coming out of the road, coming out on that dirt road, coming out to the main, not highway, because out there it was just a paved road. It wasn't a highway. Getting onto the paved road, and then 5 or 6 sheriff's department vehicles go bouncing in there really quick like.
Wow.
So I'm out there by myself with no weapon.
Wow.
And they go out there in partners, you know, with multiple guys with all their guns loaded and ready to go because they're going to go take care of business, whatever that business may have been at that time. So I've seen that firsthand.
Wow.
And I've seen that a couple times. So I know that it can happen. I know they can go out and take care of things. So it's just a matter of getting it destroyed. And it's not just the sheriff's department. There are other citizens of the county that are willing to help with that, and they've helped neighboring counties do exactly that. So I don't see why they don't work together in tandem and ask neighboring counties to help out as well. There are ways of making this happen in different ways, thinking outside the box, and I know that they know this. I know that they can do it. It's just getting the green light to get it done.
Now, Corky, you were talking about in the last program, you were talking about crime, and both of you discussed that. I want to get an answer from both of you, but you know, we have a real crime problem here. So as a supervisor with the jurisdiction you have of the county, and you also said the sheriff was understaffed and stuff, what is a couple of things you would do or want to see happen with the crime that we have here in Shasta County with your jurisdiction?
Well, everything kind of gets back to the jail. We don't have enough beds. So whenever the law enforcement, whether it's the cities or the sheriff's department, whenever they catch somebody and haul them to jail, they get released. It's like, so we need more space, and we need to be able to prosecute them and not just turn them loose. We're seeing that happening pretty regular, where it's somebody's stolen a vehicle every month for the last 6 months.
But if it's not a crime.
Same guy.
If it's not a crime. See, the thing is if you have AB 109 and you have all these different laws that we have, and it's not a crime, and you can steal up to $990 worth of stuff and walk out of the store with it, the thing is, we keep hearing that you're going to stop crime, we're going to stop crime, we've got to stop crime here. First of all, the jurisdiction of Shasta County has no jurisdiction really over the police department in Redding, and that's where what, half the people live, or more than half the people? So, Wynn, what would your response be to that? What would you do? What would you do flat out to go and stop crime rather than just, see the problems? But what would you do to solve it? And a jail is a good a thing to do, but a guy sleeping out in front here and taking a dump in front of your door of your business isn't, you're not going to arrest him for that. So what?
Well, as a board member, as a sitting board member, you're you're able to talk to other boards, you know, your neighboring counties.
Gotcha.
Talk to them. I've talked about this before where you would do the talk to the state about working with the High Desert Prison. They've got parts of it closed down. So in the meantime, while we're trying to build a jail here, why not either rent space if we have to do that, go in partnership with the neighboring counties to do exactly that. Oh. Take all the long-term offenders that are in there for more than 364 days,
wow,
that are their penalty for that. Take them and ship them over to Susanville. And then once the jail's done, then if we have to take them back and bring them back to Shasta County and house them here locally, then we can do that. But with the expansion of the jail, the way they're looking to do it, or at least what I've been told, it looks pretty good and it would be doable because they could have all kinds of services offered there that once you turn them back out, then they're going to be prepared. They're going to have a driver's license. They could have a checking account. They're going to have services they're provided to them so that they go out the door with something more than just an empty pockets and maybe a dirty sweatshirt, because all they're going to do is go back out and reoffend if that's how they are released. So if they're released with some preparation, maybe they have to take a class on certain things that they can do, maybe helping them find a trade to get into the trades. They don't need to go to college. I mean, because we can't afford the timeline or for the living conditions for that and everything else, but if getting them into a trade of some sort, some of these guys that are offending do have trade skills already, and maybe there's a way to help them get those back more polished, get them ready to go, and help them to get back on their feet and stay on their feet so that they become productive citizens versus a drain on the system.
Well, that's really nice to hear some kind of solution rather than we've got this horrible problem, we need to take rid of it, so we need more cops. I mean, you know, you can
never have enough cops.
You never can have enough cops.
I know that because I've got family members who are cops.
Let's get more cops. It's kind of like, you know, you're a farmer, you buy a bale of hay for a dollar, then you sell a bale of hay for a dollar, and you think you need a bigger truck.
Yep.
So
yep.
Anyway, yes, yep. Stones, what say you, sir?
Good morning. Two-part question. Very simple. First of all, do the candidates believe that election fraud is an issue? And the second part of that question is, what are you willing to do about it at the local level? And I would appreciate if Mr. Harmon would answer first. Have a good day.
You bet. Corky?
Well, I've said this quite a few times in quite a few settings. It's if anybody out there, and I hear people saying this, that there's absolutely no problems with our voting systems. It's a clean system. It works well, and we don't need to do anything about it. Well, they're kidding themselves. If they're saying that, they're not paying attention. There's just case after case after case. We hear stories. I told this story the other day that the girl that worked in my office that moved to Bend several years ago. She's registered Democrat. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but she got four absentee ballots in the mail.
Wow.
And I know she's an honest person, but what if it wasn't an honest person? And they just spill them out, send them in, all four of them. Do they get kicked out? And if they tell me they cleaned the voter rolls up, then how'd they get mailed out? And if they say, well, when they come back in, they're going to check them again. Well, they ain't checking very good, or they wouldn't have got mailed out to begin with. So, I mean, that's just a common sense thing to me. But and you hear everything all the way across the country, but absolutely, there's it's not secure. Our voting system is not secure.
Oh, okay. There is absolutely voter fraud here in Shasta County. We've seen it, and it's been explained to us multiple ways by multiple people, multiple scenarios. I even co-hosted a podcast on it, a couple podcasts on it doing that, and we talked to folks on the radio about it. It's frustrating that we have to deal with that here locally when we've been told point blank that the rolls are clean and we have proof that they are not. So there is voter fraud. It needs to be cleaned up and it needs to be done now because it's costing us money every time an invalid ballot is sent out. So if somebody's deceased or whatever, moved out of the county, what have you, or even out of the state, and they're still receiving them, or they're being mailed to another state. We've heard stories of that too. So why are they being mailed out of the county? It should not be mailed out of the county. If they're registered in the county, it goes to that county address. And then we know of other properties that are earmarked for receiving or property addresses are being used for receiving ballots, and they are businesses or government agencies or vacant properties between two businesses or properties with development on them. So we know that. We've seen that. What would I do? Well, it would be a really good discussion to have once we have a forensic audit done on that department. And keep in mind, in California, 22 months is the length of time that they are mandated to hold on to the election results. So any result that we would be able to go through, we have to do immediately. So looking back, you go back to that 22-month mark, whatever that is, and then work from that point forward. And there are ways of getting the other information from older elections as well, and we have that data. So we need to work on it and have it done and be audited 100%. Needs to happen because it's costing the county money, again, to send out invalid ballots that are coming back in, that may be coming back in, and I'm sure there are, that are illegal and they're wrong. It's costing us money.
Wow. You know, I mean, that's a great answer. I mean, I'm just saying because I like the idea of asking a question and getting a solution. I think I think that's a very, very, a lot of good points there with some real direction. Dave, can you hang on till after the break? We're going to take a break. So hang on there and we'll get to your call right after this. And time has come for 51. Let's get it done.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune. And we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Shout out to Redding Rancheria. Appreciate you guys for all your help. With the help that you guys gave us, we were able to stick around, retain some of our employees, and make sure all the customers got what they needed. Thank you guys.
Hi there. Us here at the Post Office Saloon would like to thank the Redding Rancheria for supporting us and our community through the COVID pandemic.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
The seasons are changing. Keeping your family healthy is important. So is the health of your car. The longevity and reliability of your vehicle depends on you to make sure your oil, radiator coolant, windshield wipers, and other vital systems have all been taken care of so your car can bring your healthy family through the seasons. Drive into Premier Oil Change today and experience the friendly oil change. Premier doesn't require an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Maintain your car warranty with our service while you stay in the comfort and safety of your own car. Enjoy a free beverage and Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Stop into a Premier Oil Change near you today. Visit us in Palisadro, in the Holiday Shopping Center, or in Redding, on Lake Boulevard, near Waterworks Park, and Anderson, across from Roundtable Pizza. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Sally Lou. Toby Keith. Yep, Toby Keith. Thank you, Sally Lou. Today is a day that will live in absurdity. That is that we look at what's going on in our town. I just saw some people walk by the window out here, and I'm thinking, you know, this is the gift that keeps on giving. This is Redding, and all three people in this room have been living in this county for, I think I'm the one who's lived here the least amount of time. I've been here for 46 years. So, you know, we're all seeing this thing change. But before we go off onto that and talk a little bit about that, we need to get to our caller. Dave, are you still on the line? Dave, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you, Dave?
Great. Thank you. Well, speaking of absurdity, I'm calling about the crime situation.
Yes, sir.
And I know someone who had their car stolen by a prolific car thief, and the criminal was caught in Reading with it. And anyway, it took the Reading PD 3 hours to catch this guy because he just knew the more he put the public in danger, the more the cops would call off the chase, and they did three times. They had to call in a CHP helicopter to get this guy, and they eventually caught him. And the Reading PD charged him with 13 felonies, two misdemeanors. The district attorney's office dropped all the crimes, all the charges except for three felonies. So you need to get the district attorney up there and these assistant DAs to stop dropping felony charges to get a plea deal, okay? Because I don't know if you know this, but in California, when a felon, if a felon's going to commit one crime, he might as well commit a whole bunch of them, because they can only be charged for fully for one felony. The others are considered subordinate felonies, and under that, the sentencing law, they only serve one-third the middle term for the subordinate felonies. So that's like a fraction of the original sentence. And then to make it worse, they only have to serve half of that. So felons only have to serve. So in this case, this guy got he got 4 years for assaulting the cop with the car. He got 1 year for the stolen car, and he got 1 year for having drugs and a gun on him. And he's felon. He shouldn't have had a gun. So anyway, that because he could only get one third the middle sentence. That's why he only got 1 year for those two other felonies. And then he only has to serve half of that. Okay, so he only has to serve out of 6 years. He only has to serve three. And last week, I found out that CDCR is letting them out 10 months early. So if we're going to have sentencing laws like this, the DAs have got to not drop all these charges, because I don't think people understand that these criminals get ridiculously short sentences, which are only a fraction of the original time they should be getting. And then they get dumped into the community where they just reoffend, right? And
well, you know, the thing is that the DA, there is some jurisdiction of the supervisors with her budget and everything else. And I know that, Corky, you said that, you know, I don't know how you stand on the DA other than you said you get along with her. But, I don't know where you stand with the DA other than I know that you've disagreed with some of the things she's done. I think the thing is that these guys have to really charge where they can charge. And I think a lot of it is they're taking priorities or what. I'm not really sure what it is, but I hear more and more. I did hear of a case where a gentleman actually had been rammed by another car, and just, you know, it wasn't anything that was intentional. They didn't know each other. He was rammed by this car, and the lady didn't get any jail time at all. And when asked what, you know, why she ran into his car, he even asked her, he said, why did you do that to me? And she said, I was trying to kill myself. So, wouldn't that at least rise to manslaughter on her part? And there was no consequences whatsoever. So, anyway, Dave, thanks for that. I'm going to see how these guys respond to that. Corky, what would you do in that case? I mean, as far as the DA goes, you have control, I believe, over her budget. Or do you know what control you have? As a supervisor, what jurisdiction do you have over that situation?
Well, absolutely. It's part of the county budget. So, we would have, as a supervisor, we would have some jurisdiction over that. When I say I know her and I've met her a few times, I'm not personal friends with her. And I absolutely, as a county supervisor, if whoever gets elected into that position, that's who I'm going to support.
Are you talking about whoever gets elected into the DA position?
Yes.
That's not what we're. The question is that what would you do to see if you could, with the jurisdiction you have, to make the DA prosecute cases like this? That's the question. It isn't a matter of support or not support. It's a matter of action. Go ahead.
Well, it's kind of a competitive thing, it seems like, which I don't agree with, but, you know,
where. I don't understand that.
Well, when they talk about their record.
Oh, okay.
Well, they always run on their record, right? Okay. How many cases have they,
gotcha.
Made, you know, and, so, but it, yeah, it's, it, I mean, we all know that it's like catch and release pretty much, because they don't have enough space or whatever. They steal a car like this guy's talking about, but that guy, you know, was, it was.
Okay, well, I'm gonna just go on and win, with all due respect, because I'm trying to get an answer to the question. Wynn, what would you do? And how would you handle this with your jurisdiction as a supervisor to have the DA be more compliant to these kinds of things? Because this is something that's well, I mean, look what happened to Carlos Zapata, you know? They used four DAs. They had security. They spent tens of thousands of dollars on a court case that ended up being a slap on the hand for Carlos when all he did was move his hand across and spill some water on somebody by accident. Anyway, what say you?
Well, it comes back to the purse string control. The Board of Supervisors has the executive and legislative control of all the funding for every department.
Okay.
So if she's only going to have her staff do a third of the work, then maybe they get a third of the budget.
Okay.
So it's going to equate to dollars, and dollars are very important to her to keep her department running and to make sure she has enough bodies in there working.
Okay.
Because if she can't afford to keep people on there, she's going to lose people, right? And then her work is going to even get worse. So she has to decide what she's going to do and how she's going to do it. If she's going to step up, if she's going to play in the big boy game and do this, she needs to do it right. If there are multiple counts that the law enforcement, the guys out on the ground, the sheriff's deputies, the police departments, if they're charging these guys with all these things, and they pass it on to her, and she dismisses what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
She's telling them to go.
Make a deal. Yeah.
She's telling them to go pound sand.
Right.
And so, I have family members that are in law enforcement here in this county,
mm-hmm.
and I know that they are all very frustrated with exactly that. So, why would we allow that as the executive and legislative body, being the Board of Supervisors, to allow the DA or any other law enforcement to allow that to happen? It needs to be done. It needs to be done correctly. It needs to be done at the full and use the full extent of the law to charge these guys. Otherwise, they're going to go back out and offend, and they're going to go out and do something heinous and cause death and more destruction of property here in our county. That's unacceptable on my watch. I won't stand for it. I will have those questions. We'll bring her into the board, and she can tell the good citizens of this county and worldwide why she stands the way she does. So we need to make sure that we have those conversations. Are they going to be painful? Yes, they're going to be painful. Are they necessary? Absolutely. Are they way overdue? You betcha.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, you have to understand the jurisdiction of your job. I mean, you know, you have to understand what you can do and what you can't do. I mean, really and truly, it's bad, it's really bad. They say it was bad, it's bad. It's really bad. You know it's bad? It's bad. But how do you fix it? Anyway, we have a caller. Lori, what say you?
Good morning, Terry. Yeah, I have a two-parter for the candidates. One would be, how would they address the coverage and media that we've got, the troll online media, we have the fake news, the biased news, and all the rest, because what they do is they twist and distort people who are not paying attention. So how would they address that one? And it obviously kind of relates to the Eric Magrini lawsuit. I think our county's out now $90,000 because of concealing information or whatnot, but media is my first question. My second
okay,
one.
You don't. I'll keep you on the line. You're fine. Let him answer the first question, because a lot of times when people ask two questions, I know for me, it's tough to remember both of them. So what say you guys
on
what you just said, the control of the media? Go ahead, Corky.
So what we're talking about is the disruptions going on in the board meeting.
No, she's talking about the control of the media.
Media,
right?
Lying, fake news,
right? And I mean, we see a lot of that right in the meetings as well. You know, as well, that's the part that's really frustrating, because it's disrupting. And I can't sit here and tell you I know exactly what to do as far as the media goes. It's called free speech, and they say whatever they want. They can lie and make up stories, and it's like, holy smokes, you know. And we know it, and I think most of the people know it, but they still do it. And it's just like those board meetings when they walk in there, and all they're there for is to disturb the peace.
Well, we'll get into that one. You answered the media part. That's great.
Okay.
The media. I don't want to go into what happens in the meetings, because I want to talk to you both about that.
All right.
Okay. The media control. they can't control the media. That's the beauty of this whole country. They have the First Amendment right to do what they do, but they also have the consequences that come with that. So if they're going to be liars and cheats, then they are going to have to expose themselves, which they do, and they have been doing that here currently, especially on the no recall. The yes recall, the one that they're supporting. So they're lying out there. They're putting fabrications out there to hurt the county as a whole.
Yeah.
They have one target on that they're after, and that's Kevin Cry, but they are targeting the entire county for this recall, and it's bad, and they are lying wholeheartedly. So you just need to keep your back to the wall and watch what they do, because they're showing their true colors. They have been showing their true colors, and they're going to continue showing their true colors. And you don't have to engage. You don't have to follow their chats, whatever they have online. You don't have to buy their printed material, whether it's a newspaper or what have you. Don't do that. Don't engage. Don't give them the time of day. Just move on. Let them just follow out at some point, and things will get better.
Okay, Lori, second question.
You bet. And my point is
give us the question, hon. We're starting to get short on time.
Got it. Okay, yeah. The other one is, and I don't want state government media. Of course not. I want alternative media. My second, final question is, there seems to be a massive amount of blame to whoever is the chair regarding people that are resigning, quitting, retiring, leaving, moving on, going to other nonprofits like we had with Ramstrom being fired in 2022. We've got all these legal council people coming and going, various reasons, insubordination, incompetence, and all the rest. So how would they handle that this is part of our budget being thinned out a little bit? I mean, some people have to be replaced, but could they address that aspect of the chair people taking blame when people are starting to realize the COVID fraud and other mismanagement?
Okay. Got it. And I want to get a little quicker answers out of both of you because I want there's a couple things I want to bring up, if I may. Anyway, thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay. Wynn, Lori, second question.
Okay.
A couple of minutes, okay?
I get where she's going with this. We have to be careful. And we don't want to set a negative precedent, if you will. We have to be very careful on what we do and how we do it. But whatever the jurisdiction that the Board of Supervisors has, they need to operate within that. 100%. Absolutely. Go up to the line on everything. They have to do that. And with all the staff that are leaving, there are reasons those people are leaving. Maybe they're close to retirement age. They want to get out, you know, while the getting's good. They don't want to be a target of, you know, certain things that are going to be brought to the board. Well, they're going to be a target when things get brought to the board. The long arm of the law has no limits. If they've done something illegal, immoral, and wrong by exposure when the forensic audit occurs, they will be tapped on the shoulder and be deposed for their actions. Just because they leave doesn't mean they're off the hook. Whether they retire, like we're going to have a retirement here pretty soon from the clerk of the board, any other staff members, you know, the attorneys, they could see some of this stuff coming down the road. They know that if somebody gets in there, things are going to be exposed, and rightfully so. We need to know those things. And it's been going on far too long, and we need to get it cleaned up. We cannot allow bureaucrats to continue doing what they do to us in this county, and they're doing it behind the scenes, so we don't even know the full extent of all the things that have been happening. A forensic audit will help expose all that, and we'll find out what we need to do, what we need to clean up, what we need to address, and how to address it. That's why we have to have a good county council, and those that left already, maybe they obviously weren't the ones fit for the job. And then, you know, the same with the assistant CAO that was there for a while. Then they went to another agency that just got a boatload of money from the Zog fire, went to that agency to run it and to manage it. What does that tell you? There's a lot of stuff going on here that is not right, and we need to get it cleaned up.
Okay, Corky.
So I totally get what, you know, everybody's, you know, because there's a lot of pressure going on with this forensics audit. The only thing I would like to be careful of is, absolutely, if there's somebody in there that's doing what they're not supposed to be doing, they're going to be getting squirrely and they're going to be feeling like, holy smokes, I'm a short timer around here. I mean, I've been running business my whole life and dealing with crews and people and,
sure. And
most of the time, the people that are working around each other, if you're in there and you're a manager and you know all those people, you'll learn from the people. Who's good and who's bad in there, you know, without, I believe in the forensics audit, but I mean.
Can you explain to the folks just briefly what's the difference between a forensic audit and a regular audit? We keep hearing the term forensic audit, Corky. What does that even mean? What is a forensic audit? What's the difference? Go ahead.
Well, I know I get a little frustrated with it, actually, because it's like we should be auditing everything. It doesn't have...
No. What's the difference between a forensic audit and a regular audit? That's my question. So the folks understand each time you guys talk about forensic audits, what does that term mean and what's the difference? Go ahead.
A forensics audit is very detailed. Where's the money going? How's it being dispersed? And making sure that, you know, everything adds up, everything balances, everybody's following the rules. And I mean, it's a forensics audit. It's like a forensics investigation, right? Details. Where's all the
okay.
evidence? All the evidence.
Okay, that's okay. Then, Wynn, what is the difference between a forensic audit and a regular audit?
Well, regular audit is basically just, in accounting purposes, it's like debit and credit, making sure things balance. So
you are checking it. Okay.
Yeah, and that's what the auditor does. They balance the accounts, yeah, okay. given the information they're given, and they go through the process and make sure that's all good. A forensic audit does, similar to what Corky was saying, you do the deep dive into those accounts. You find out what's going on within those accounts. Who's spending the money? Who's authorizing the spending of the money? Who's receiving the money? Were they authorized to receive that money? Was it monies that they were supposed to be even spending? And where did that money come from? And so you're looking at all of that combined, and that's what a good forensic audit will do. It'll tell you the story of what's going on. It's not going to come up with an outcome that you push forward. It's going to be the outcome of what it is.
Well, here's the answer I was looking for from both of you.
Yeah?
Isn't a forensic audit, can't you use that in court? You can't use a regular audit?
That's where I was going. Because then if something has been done illegally, then you can use that information and proof. Because then you can take it to court and you can file charges for that.
Ah,
so if people are doing things illegal, and that goes back to people leaving the county.
Yes, sir.
So are they leaving the county because they just, you know, they're just done, it's time to retire, or they just want to move on and go someplace else? You know, they go to Idaho, they go to Montana, they go to Nevada, they're moving on. So they leave completely because they're fearful of what's going to be exposed. Well, okay, maybe if they hadn't done something wrong, then there should be no fear. But if they have done something wrong and there is proof and there is truth to it, then we need to prosecute for all those actions. Absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
And that's why the DA has to be on board. The DA has to do their job.
Okay.
And the sheriff has to be able to serve the papers and do all that stuff as well. So they all have to be in line. No matter what the criminal act is, it has to be dealt with.
Thank you. For clarification, that is what a forensic audit is.
Terry.
Yes, sir.
Can I say one more quick thing?
Sure.
I just want to make sure... I totally agree with what everybody's talking about here, but I just want to make sure that we're not beating up the good people in there because the atmosphere's...
All you're looking at is numbers. It's nothing personal. You're looking at the numbers, like you said. If you're for a forensic audit and you guys are for it and now everybody understands it would go to court, it isn't anything to do with beating anybody up. It's simply you're looking at the data. I mean, that's just part of the gig.
Well, but we're looking for fall guys.
Well, I mean, you may be. I don't know. I wouldn't.
I'm not.
Okay. Well, I don't.
I just want to know the truth. But
well, yeah, that's
like,
why
just
they,
like you do.
Yeah, but that's why the forensic audit is important, because then you find out the truth. So the truth is, whoever the person is who's in charge of that department should be on top of it. It's just like if you have a foreman on a job, same thing. He's still got to be on top of it. So anyway, Bruce, how are you, sir? Do you have a question? And we're starting to run out of time here, buddy. So you have a question for Corky, Bruce, or do you have a question for Wynn? Go ahead, Bruce.
Yes, a quick question. You talked about election fraud, and everybody agrees there is fraud here locally. But will the candidates agree to push back against the state so we can adopt a manual hand count system? And we need to fight the state, and I'm just wondering what their position is on going to manual hand count.
Outstanding. Okay, Corky, what would you do?
Well, we're doing that right now. The current supervisors are, and I would keep following that protocol, what they're doing. Yeah, we need to push back and make sure it's right, get it done.
Okay, Wynn, what would you do? Little?
Yeah, hand count is absolutely imperative to everything we do, because the machines that we use or are going to be forced to use, guess what? How do they audit those? Through a hand count. So what does that tell you? Let's just do the hand count from the get-go. Just do the hand count from the get-go,
yeah,
and then we're going to be okay. Keep the machines out of it so that they're not hackable, so that everything is auditable. We can see what we have. We can see the results. And when you do the hand count, doing the paper ballots like we used to do, here in Shasta County and everywhere else, we could audit those lickety-split. If there's an issue in a certain precinct, we can just pull them out, look at them, do a quick count. We know what we have. So those are the kind of things that we need to get back to. It'll save a lot of time, save a lot of money, and save a lot of frustration, and people will be able to witness the actual counting of that instead of just assuming that these machines are not being hacked. And so we need to make sure that we do that.
Okay, and yeah, I mean, you got to push back against. I mean, let's face it, folks. You want the real answer to that? Both these guys are saying the same thing. That is, just say no. Anyway, Steve, to the machines. Just say no to the machines.
Yeah,
Steve,
yeah.
We only got a couple of minutes, buddy. Do you have a question for these guys?
Yeah, real quick.
Okay.
Wasn't it you and Wynn who brought up the forensic audit on your show originally?
I brought it up for
years ago. Yeah.
Years ago, when we used to have the Patriot meetings at the Destiny
exactly.
Fellowship Hall, and
exactly.
I've been talking to every politician ever since then about doing that, and not one of them has done it. Not one.
Wow.
So, I miss you too on the radio show. You were a good balance to each other.
Yeah, Steve, we need. We're looking for questions here, buddy. We're running out of time. Do you have a question?
No, I don't have. I just want to make a statement that here in the Epoch News, you were talking about news earlier. Shasta County Bucks state law approves concealed carry in county buildings.
Right.
That's in the Epoch Times this,
right.
This week,
right.
Half a page article.
Right.
Thank you for all you do.
You bet. Okay, so, you know, I think that, we talk a lot about the disruption in the boardroom. I was really surprised why the sheriff didn't have any deputies at the last meeting, not the last meeting, the meeting before. He's done that to us twice now. I know that there is a way that the Board of Supervisors can demand that there's a sheriff there just because of all the disruption. I don't know why he didn't have anybody there. I haven't heard that explanation first from anybody, and you guys don't have it, but I'd sure like to get one from the supervisors. It may be a question. Okay, the last thing I want to do here is that, Corky, so if people want to find out more about you or they want to support you, where do they go?
My website is CorkyHarmon.com, CorkyHarmon.com.
Wynn, same question.
VoteWynnCarpenter.com.
You know, we will be having, I'm going to reach out to Mary Rickard again. It's a shame we have three people in that race. Having three people in a race like that, I think we probably can be safe to say you look at November. The challenge that we have, though, is, really keeping some guys in office in this county that we need to keep in office.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, the real deal is that, you know, it's we need for good people to unite, not to be in a position to where they're not we need to get people on the same team, whatever that team looks like, but a way we can start heading toward the same direction. I think that's one of the problems we've had. The disruption in the Board of Supervisors is something that that I think we might have enough time for. 30 seconds, Corky, what would you do for the disruption of the people speaking out of turn, et cetera? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a tough one, you know, because you got freedom of speech. People walk in there, but if you got the same person over and over again every week, it seems like that's happening a lot, and they're just there to disrupt. It seems like there should be something we can say, hey, you're gonna, you know, you're not welcome in here, or you, yeah, that's I know, I see you looking at me like.
No. I'm just saying, yeah, it's the disruption. If you disrupt a meeting, it's a penal code violation, penal code 403.
Right.
Okay, and that's what they're doing. It isn't freedom of speech. When you disrupt a meeting, you're taking away my rights.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm speaking and you burst out in the audience and I'm speaking, you took away my rights. Wynn, what say you? What would you do?
Well, they always seem to do it from the back of the room. They don't do it at the podium. And so you're absolutely right on citing the penal code. The sheriff's deputies need to act on it. And they need to be directed by the sheriff. The sheriff needs to direct that. And if he's not going to do it, then maybe we need to have a heart-to-heart with him about his budget as well.
Okay, gentlemen, well, listen, lively debate. You're both good men. Folks, you can you can listen to this. You can go back and listen to the archive. Go back to Jefferson State of Mind. Go to this date on our program, and you can listen to the archive. And I would suggest you share it. You can share this worldwide. You can share this with anybody. But I think what we need to do is we need to start moving forward in this county to really get something done. And I think the primary thing is we look at these people that are running for office, no matter who they are. A, they need to know what their jurisdiction is. B, they need to know how to interpose. And C, they need to know how to nullify bad law. And with that, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
And time has come for 51. Let's get it done.
In a Jefferson state of mind. You don't know us, you have no clue, and still you're telling us what to do.
Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.